The fourth case this morning is Menix v. Carnarsi.
May it please the Court, my name is Sean Kenyon, and I represent the estate of Greg Zick. Under the law, pretrial detainees have a due process right to be free from punishment. That right is violated when they are held, they present with a serious medical condition, and that medical condition is not met with reasonable medical aid. In this case, Greg Zick, a suicidal 18-year-old, did not receive competent medical, specifically mental health care, during his stay at the St. Joseph County Jail. The result was that he hanged himself, committing suicide in the jail. When Greg entered the jail, he came with a long history of mental illness. He was on medication, not only
for... Are we talking about deliberate indifference here?
Yes, Your Honor.
You didn't quite frame it that way. It sounded more like didn't receive proper care.
He didn't receive care that was constitutionally required. They were deliberately indifferent to the fact that he needed treatment for mental illness, and he did not receive it in any sort of competent way. It fell well below the constitutionally required standards. As such, the estate is asking this court to reverse the district court's decision granting summary judgment for specific individuals, Dr. David, supervising nurse James, Christine Lons, and two entities, Memorial Hospital and Madison Center.
Was he receiving some medication?
Yes, Your Honor. He had three prescriptions. They were designed to treat depression, and also he was on medication to treat his suicidal ideations, to help keep those under control. He was on those when he entered, and that prescription continued while he was at the jail, although there were several times when he refused the medications and did not take them, or did not take them in a timely way.
The jail who during intake had to go elsewhere to find out what prescriptions he was on?
There were several different sources for the information. He had been in a patient at a mental hospital, and they were provided the information from the mental health hospital as to the medications that he was on. In addition, his mother provided information with regard to the medications that he was taking. Essentially, this was overall a systemic failure, almost a systemically assured failure, that resulted in Greg being denied constitutionally required mental health care. Ultimate responsibility for that must lie with those responsible for the planning and the staffing for the health care at the jail.
Ms. Kenyon, I'm curious about Madison and Lons. It seemed to me that what Lons did and Madison's involvement is on the front end of his entry into the jail, and then they really don't seem to have involvement after that, and the other decisions that are made are about a month after their involvement. What is the connection between what Lons and Madison did and what you say is the deliberate indifference?
That
caused the death.
Time-wise, Your Honor, that is correct. Our position is this. Madison Center contracted with the county to provide mental health care to the patients. They were, in fact, contacted to have someone come over to assess Greg when he was very near his intake time at the jail. They sent Christine Lons. She was not in any way qualified to do that. And what happened was she did not ask the proper questions, did not do the proper assessment. She didn't even find out when she was talking with him as part of her interview and assessment process that he was on suicide watch at the time. She wasn't trained in pharmacology, and she
right.
found out.
But then he goes into the general population for about a month,
right.
I think, and then some other behaviors caused the jail folks and Memorial to focus in on him. But it seems to me Madison is pretty much out of the picture by that point. Maybe what they did was wrong in evaluating his assessment going in, but this long time period goes by without them being back involved in reassessing him.
It's
having
our position,
difficulty seeing what causation there could be there.
It's our position is that had they sent a properly qualified individual, that person would have identified early on Greg's the level of his illness, the need for treatment, and gotten a psychiatrist involved. That didn't happen.
But he was later focused on because of the missing razor and was actually put on suicide watch after being in the general population. Right?
Right, yeah.
So how does... I don't see how Madison and Lons have any connection at that point to ultimately what happened.
Well, there are several things. First of all, Ms. Lons was not clear at all as to what the others should be observing for and when they saw those things, when they should call her to come back. She did not clarify that at all. She did not provide any information to the jail to the jail doctor so that he would see Greg. And she did not indicate that there should be any kind of special observations of him taken by the jail staff. Therefore, she did not provide any kind of sufficient information to even know when the staff and the other people at the jail should contact Madison Center or her to come back to assess him. You're right in that he does go into a second period of... suicide watch after he secreted the razor, which the guards interpreted as an attempt to take his life. At that time, he was not seen by Madison Center. We maintain that he should have been under their contract. And again, he's not seen by any kind of physician. He's in suicide watch, and several things, again, are not done to provide him with appropriate care. He's not observed under the interval schedule that even the jail policy provides for. This happened repeatedly during his stay. He wasn't provided with any interval checks during his initial suicide watch period or not as required by the policy. During his second stay in suicide watch, the interval checks were not done so that his actual demeanor, his behavior could be documented for anyone to make a judgment about what his situation was. The second time he's in the suicide watch, he actually refuses his medications. He's not taking them. And despite that, Jean James, who was the supervising nurse for the mental health unit in the jail, doesn't assure that he sees a physician, doesn't try to get him in any assistance from Madison Center, never even advises a doctor of his behavior or what's going on. She's had reports from guards who are very concerned that Greg poses a risk to his own safety. She has enough information at that time to know he's been hospitalized previously for mental illness. There are reports of him making suicide attempts in the past, and despite all of that, she releases him from suicide watch into disciplinary segregation. Even the expert hired by the jail, Lindsay Hayes, said it was completely inappropriate to put him in a punishment cell when part of the reason for putting him there was the concern that he had attempted or was going to attempt suicide.
But did that have to do with this, the razor blade incident?
Yes, Your Honor. What happened was when he when there was concern that he had secreted a razor blade, he was moved to suicide watch. But charges were also placed against him, one of which was that he had attempted suicide. And because of that, When they moved him from suicide watch, he went into disciplinary segregation. So there he was by himself. The medical staff took no steps to intervene to protect against that scenario. And what's more, while he's in disciplinary segregation, for a period of roughly maybe 9 hours before he, 8 to 9 hours before he commits suicide, again, nobody makes any interval checks on him. So again, he's not getting any care. And on that very day, they know he hasn't taken his medication. It was Dr. David and Memorial's hospital to assure that the people who went to the jail to provide medical care were properly licensed and trained. That's part of what's provided in the policy. And they were the supervisors. They contracted with the jail to do that. Yet they took no steps to assure that Ms. Lons was in any way trained or qualified. It's clear under Indiana statute that although she was held out by Memorial and herself as a qualified mental health professional.
Not Memorial, Madison.
I apologize if I misspoke.
She's not under David's control in any way, right?
Well, under the regulations and under the jail policy, it was Memorial Home Care, and which was associated with Memorial Hospital, where Dr. David was employed, who was to verify the state licensure of every health care provider before hiring or granting approval for that person to work at the jail. He's the only physician. Well, actually, there were a group of physicians, jail doctors, but ultimately, they were the ones who had to supervise the people providing the medical care at the jail. There's no one else going there qualified to do that. And yet, there was no efforts to check her qualifications. The record's clear on that. She didn't carry the qualifications to even be identified as a qualified mental health professional.
So that's David's personal involvement in this, that he failed to adequately check the certification of Lons and the Madison people?
And not only her, but also the nurses under his direct supervision there.
Like James.
James and the other nurses who were working there, Aaron Maurer, for instance, testified that before Greg died, the nurses were not trained in suicide prevention. Also, well, Dr. David recognized that nurse Jean James could allow those on suicide watch to be released. He had no information with regard to what her training or qualifications were in order to determine suicide risk and suicidality.
You're in your rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Your Honor. Record, my name is Milford Miller. I represent Madison and Christine Lons. Your Honor, I'd like to address, first of all, some of the statements made by Minnick's counsel with respect to the affidavit of Dr. Gutierrez, an affidavit which the trial court recognizes once stricken leaves the appellant with no evidence whatsoever that the second prong of the two-prong test recognized in Farmer versus Brennan and by this court in Matos versus O'Sullivan, that being that the defendant was deliberately indifferent to the prisoner's health and safety, that prong could not be met. And I think it's important that the court consider, first of all, statements made by the appellant's counsel in the appellant's brief that I believe misstate what the trial court said in its order. I refer specifically to the appellant's brief on pages 26, 28, and 29, and the reply brief on page 10, where it is said that the trial court concluded, in effect, that the materials that Dr. Gutierrez reviewed, and I quote from the appellant's brief, constituted the methodology reasonably relied on by experts in the medical field. That, Your Honors, is not what the trial court said in its order. The trial court said that the various materials that the plaintiff's expert relied upon were, they constituted evidence reasonably relied upon by experts in the medical field. But the trial court went on to say, very importantly, that having once said that these materials represent evidence that an expert may rely on reasonably in the field, that it is time to turn to look at the expert's methodologies and see what methodologies the expert brings forth from these various numerous studies. And if you look, Your Honor, please, on page 27 of the appellant's brief, the reference is made, I'm sorry, to tab 4 of the court's order and page 8. The court says, the trial court says, the defendants don't challenge Dr. Gutierrez's qualifications or the relevancy of his opinions. So, says the trial court, inquiry focuses on the reliability of his methodology. The trial court then reviews the Gutierrez affidavit and examines that methodology and finds there is no methodology. That, in truth, the Gutierrez affidavit is no more than bottom-line opinions. Now, this court has said bottom-line opinions are fine, but it's also said that there has to be the availability of reliability on demand. And there is nothing in the Gutierrez affidavit that in any way supports the bottom-line conclusions. Examples of the remarkable bottom-line conclusions without support appear quite rapidly in the Gutierrez affidavit, which is document 73-29 in the electronic docket. He says at paragraph 4, I'm familiar with the minimum standards of care that are uniform throughout the United States for the care of patients. Uniform standards throughout the United States. Yet nowhere in his affidavit does he remotely suggest that there is a source for that statement, that there are indeed uniform standards throughout the United States. But having said that, and supplying no basis for the bottom line conclusion, the doctor goes on to say that he also is familiar with the minimum standards, including the standard of care in St. Joseph's County. Well, I assume that if indeed there are countrywide minimum standards, that you probably are familiar with what the ones are in a particular county. But if there are no uniform standards across the country, there certainly are no reason to believe that this expert or any other expert can insist upon that there are standards of care specifically to be found with respect to the determination of assessments of prisoners. Submit that it has been said repeatedly by the appellant that Christine Lons was not qualified. Who says? Counsel says, and her experts say. Yet there is nowhere where the expert says why that person is, in his opinion, not qualified to make an assessment. Christine Lyons has a degree. She has experience. She has worked for a number of years doing mental health assessments. She has spoken in the record with respect to the training she received.
Mr. Miller, do you accept the argument that Mr. Groves asserts about mootness, that the acceptance of the offer of the judgment?
If hope is acceptance, then I certainly accept it. I don't know the answer to that. I don't purport to know the answer. I know that that is a question that within the state of Indiana, in the area of medical malpractice, which frequently involves two forms of claims, one, the medical malpractice that might have given rise from a product liability claim, and they both go on at the same time, and that there is a recovery, say, first in the product's liability claim, that that issue has not been decided in Indiana. And I have my own opinions, but I'm sure that those are probably not worth too much to this court in that area, Your Honor. This court has consistently taken the point of view with respect to experts' opinion that...
That red light was the signal that was done.
Yeah, you're 8 minutes.
Thank you very much. I don't want to encroach at all on the other side.
Your Honor, I'm Robert Palmer, and I represent the Memorial defendants in this case.
Do you also accept Mr. Groves' argument regarding mootness?
I do, Your Honor, under the facts and circumstances of this case in which the plaintiff is alleged joint and several liability as against all defendants.
And the question would be whether that judgment accepted was full compensation. Is that right?
I believe you have to interpret the judgment accepted as full compensation because it is a judgment, and comparative fault is not at issue in this case.
All right, go ahead.
Your Honors, I'd just like to take my 4 minutes to clarify a few things. This was a summary judgment proceeding at the district court level. As the court knows, there were several orders entered by Judge Miller at the district court level, some on motions for judgment on pleading, some for partial summary judgment, motions to strike, etc. I'd like to point out to the court that many of the quotes relied upon by the appellant in this case from Judge Miller's orders came from the July 3, 2007 order in which Judge Miller denied summary judgment to the Memorial defendants because there was a statement attributed to Dr. Linares that it was beyond the scope of a nurse's education and training to make these kinds of decisions. On rehearing, it was pointed out to Judge Miller that this statement actually came from Dr. Gutierrez and not Dr. Linares, and therefore the judge had to decide whether or not Dr. Gutierrez's testimony should be stricken from the record, which he subsequently did. What was left then for the judge on summary judgment with respect to Memorial is Dr. David's opinion that it was within the scope and education of a nursing judgment to make these decisions. No contrary evidence whatsoever. So the judge was left with no genuine issue material fact based on expert testimony that Nurse James was able to make these decisions. I'd also like to point out that Memorial is different than the county defendants in alleging that in defending deliberate indifference claims. We're bound by the professional judgment standard. And under the professional judgment standard, we need to be deliberate indifferent to a medical need. We have to basically commit criminal recklessness. In other words, we have to not exercise any judgment whatsoever. Because if we do exercise... Yes, Your Honor?
Or bad judgment.
Bad judgment is not sufficient to meet that standard, Your Honor.
Well, a substantial departure from accepted medical judgment would be considered deliberate indifference, right?
I don't believe that's true, Your Honor, because under the case law, it has to amount to criminal recklessness, meaning that there was no exercise of judgment, that basically they did nothing. And in this case, even the evidence cited in the appellant's brief talks about maybe substandard judgment or a judgment that was different from what other experts would say, but they all agreed that there was an exercise of judgment by Nurse James, and that meets the professional judgment standard that we're required to meet in deliberate indifference case.
That was my initial question to your opposing counsel. This isn't a malpractice case. It's the one of whether it's deliberate indifference.
I agree, Your Honor. And those are completely separate and distinct standards, and they have a much higher burden on a deliberate indifference case. The court had some questions about Mr. Zick's medications. As referred to in our statement of facts, at the time of Mr. Zick's death, he had therapeutic levels of medications in the system. Therefore, while on occasion he did refuse his medication, at the time of his death, he did have the medications in his system. And that's referred to on page 5 of our brief in the last line of the statement of facts.
Counsel, your time's expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gross, I'm jumping on you before you even get there, and I know what you want to argue, but what are you doing here at all? I don't think that the appellant here appeals your cases at all. I think she's only appealing the other defendants.
That's a very legitimate question that I was prescient about that you may ask.
So you guys aren't really parties. Your clients aren't really parties to this appeal.
If I could explain myself, Your Honor. Thank you. And by the way, for the record, I am James Groves, and I represent the county defendants. The curious issue came about when we received the notice of appeal of the entire final judgment. This court, of course, sent me the notices. I appeared. When I did receive the plaintiff's brief, there was no pointed argument as to the jail defendants. And I...
Not even any indirect argument.
Not even any indirect argument. And the question... So two questions came up. Do I need to respond to this at all? But having been listed as a party here in the Court of Appeals, I felt, yes, the legitimate response is simple to file a simple argument, which I have done, that they have waived any argument against the jail defendants, and I'm speaking solely of the jailers now because they were dismissed out. However, in the interest of the long-term approach to this case, no one had briefed my feelings or observations about the acceptance of my offer of judgment being an adjudication on the merits. So, in effect, this case could be, assuming Your Honors would reverse the trial court, it could go back with the remaining defendants, Memorial and Madison Center. But in order to keep the case simple, it seems to me if that were to happen, it should go back only on the basis of are they liable? The damages have been adjudicated. Nobody can try that again. The result of it, so that this would not be a waste of energy and academic resources, would be a trial on the merits of Memorial and Madison as to liability. But if they are found liable, their only liability then would be as to attorney's fees that are claimed by the plaintiff, because that's the only remaining issue in this case. I hope that I've answered your questions.
Thank you, counsel. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. First of all, on one point, it is in fact the law that a determination of deliberate indifference can be reached if the medical personnel's decisions constitute such a substantial departure from accepted professional judgment practice or standards as to demonstrate they did not base the decision on such judgment. That's the law in this circuit as cited in Sandville and the estate of Cole. On the question with regard raised by Mr. Grove in the county's brief.
Oh, and I'm curious about that because you did not respond to that in your reply brief at all. So haven't you waived that argument?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. First of all, the reply brief makes it clear that I believe that the case should continue as to the parties.
You don't address the offer of judgment question at all in your brief.
And the offer of judgment is just that. It's an offer of judgment, this case.
It's accepted.
Right, Your Honor.
So it becomes a judgment. It is then a judgment.
But it's been recognized by this court that offers of judgment are settlements. They're not the equivalent of a trial on the merits. There's never been any kind of trial to determine what the damages are that have been sustained by the estate. In addition, there's a second point raised with regard to the fact that there were state court claims. Those have all now been moved to the state court given the decisions by the district court. There are different damages to be determined.
What was the disposition then of the county defendants in district court?
As to all of the county defendants, the state law claims against them remain.
But all federal claims.
What happened in federal court? That's what's my question.
As to the federal claims, they've been resolved.
By summary judgment?
By a summary judgment with respect to all but Sheriff Canarek.
And you accepted a judgment?
That he offered on behalf of himself in his official capacity.
That gets back to my. So how was he disposed of? Was a judgment entered?
Yes, Your Honor. After the offer of judgment was accepted.
That was my question. So there is a judgment against him in your favor?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.